How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
It's your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day, especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth, you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth, they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth, you probably should pay them, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King locked on trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza.
Hello and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast with the reigning Jays. Today it's me, Jay King from MassLive.com, joined from beautiful Atlanta by ESPN's Chris Forsberg. We're going to do a little different type of podcast tonight. We're not going to talk about all of Isaiah Thomas' scoring outbursts. We're not going to talk about all of the defensive issues, the rebounding woes. We're not going to talk about that. You have heard enough about all that stuff. Although maybe you want to talk more about Isaiah, because everyone seems to want to talk about Isaiah these days.
We have to wait to the fourth quarter of this podcast to talk about Isaiah.
We will come up with some Isaiah stuff in the fourth quarter, maybe. But we want to talk about the media aspect of things and how these players are to deal with from a reporter aspect. So we're going to give you a different point of view, a point of view that maybe some of you don't really know. Before we get into that, everybody needs to subscribe to the podcast. Search for Locked On Celtics podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, whether it's Audioboom, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever else. We're giving you daily podcasts, much better podcasts than any other podcast out there about the Celtics. Really, we're just on a different level. So
I just subscribed twice.
Forsberg just subscribed twice. So subscribe to us. Give us a 5-star rating. We really appreciate that. Anyway, into the Celtics media. I'll start it off like this. Who is the player this year, not of all time, that you enjoy speaking to the most?
This year? Like, it would have been easier if you asked me last year, because we could have done a whole podcast on Evan Turner. This year, the most, I mean, I think it's Isaiah. Like, Isaiah has been, I mean, and part of it is he's having such a crazy season. And, I mean, just every session is something. I mean, last night with Mayweather, and, I mean, you know, it's a random night. He'll have a quiet game, and it's still, he'll go off about disrespect and Bleacher Report and all that stuff. I like that he is the one guy that, you know, no matter what you throw at him, he's going to give you something good. It's like, you can ask him about Jordan Mickey. He's got a great Jordan Mickey story. It's like, you can't ask everybody on this team that. I just think he's the one guy we can go to that is going to be great.
Yeah, and what's great about that is that he's the all-star. He's the guy who's leading the Eastern Conference in scoring, and he's still very honest.
He hasn't changed at all. Like, and that's the, like, normally guys get to that level, and then they're like, I don't need you. You know, away media. I'm a big deal now. And Isaiah's just like, hey, guys, come here. I saw some rankings today. Let me tell you how I hate him. That's awesome. Like, I never want him to change.
Yeah, and it's funny because every slight, like, he sees everything. That Bleacher Report story. No,
I didn't see it. He saw it. Like, where? Like, people are just, you know what it is? It's all your listeners. The Reigning Jays listeners, they find something, and immediately, like, they tag him. Like, Isaiah's mentions must just be, like, chaos, because people tweet at him all the time, and yet he still takes the time to find it. Blows my mind.
Yeah, and so, like honestly, no disrespect to whoever wrote that Bleacher Report slideshow about the top point guards in the in the NBA and ranked Isaiah Thomas 11th behind Mike Conley, who has already missed I don't know how much time with a broken back this year. I didn't even know who the guy was. No, whenever you say no offense, you're going to say something that's severely offensive.
With all due respect.
So, but yeah, Isaiah, he's without him, like, not that it would be tough to cover this Celtics team, but he's a huge personality. He's a bright personality, and like there's just all types of different storylines with him, whether it's Tom Brady sending him a signed jersey or Allen Iverson posting on Instagram that he should be on the All-Star team or Floyd Mayweather showing up and sitting courtside and dapping him up in the middle of the fourth quarter. Like, there's always something going on with Isaiah Thomas that lifts him from, like, just this great player to, like, this spectacularly entertaining player on top of all the stuff he does on the court. Let's go to the new guy, Al Horford. What have been your initial aspects of the Al Horford media experience?
So, and I think that's what's hard for people to understand, right? Is like you just have this notion that professional athletes have been through this, that they're all savvy and that they all know how to deal with the media. And that's not to say that Al doesn't. It's just the complete opposite end of the spectrum from Isaiah. Whereas every night Isaiah has this fascinating storyline and great quotes, Al kind of like great at explaining why things went wrong or why that last play worked, but to get him to open up, he just doesn't want to do that. He hates talking about himself. You know, you can tell he gets uncomfortable. Like, even this week, we're like, what's it going to be like going back to Atlanta? He's like, not talking about that. I got a game to play tonight against the Wizards. It's like, man, come on, help us out here. We're like, we're not going to hold it against you. We won't even tweet anything if you want to wait. But it's just difficult. I think Al is more on the reserve side, but I keep saying this. That's why, you know, I what makes Al great for this team is that he's willing to cede that spotlight to Isaiah. But it would be great if we just came into the locker room and Al was just like wilding out about something or throwing a chair, because it just doesn't happen. He is the Brad Stevens of players. He's just very reserved, just goes about his business. He's just Al Horford.
Al Horford, that's a little rough. Yeah.
It's in a good way. Like, not everybody has to be Evan Turner or Isaiah Thomas. Like, some guys just want to show up, put in their work, and go home. I get that. Like, you know what? It makes it easier. Like, he doesn't want to deal with that. He doesn't want to go on. He's never on social media. He might like something on Instagram, but he's not going on Twitter and finding the Bleacher Report article that ranked him 10th in power forwards or stretch centers or whatever. It's just, he wants to put in the work. He wants to be really good at his job, and then he wants to go home. I respect that.
Yeah, and it's funny because I think his approach to the media is so drastically different than Isaiah's. Whereas Isaiah is super open and he wants to tell stories and he wants to tell you about his friend and this superstar he talked to, and like there's a giddiness that Isaiah Thomas brings to it. Like he enjoys it like a child would enjoy becoming a superstar almost. Like that's the level he enjoys it. The joy that he got from becoming a star, it hasn't gone away. It's just like he appreciates all of it and he takes it all in. And Al Horford, maybe he does appreciate it to the same extent, but externally he's very even. Like you said, like Brad Stevens, it's like the professionalism of that he brings to the media. He doesn't want to say anything that's going to ruffle feathers. Whereas Isaiah's like, yeah, Otto Porter, you were talking about us playing dirty. Well, we don't go running and telling, man. Al Horford would never say anything bad. He's like Brad Stevens, where he calculates every word. You can almost see him like calculating his answers before he gives them to you so that he doesn't make headlines.
You had to trick him the other night when you were like, hey, listen, Brad's already told us that he had a speech for you guys in the locker room about keeping your heads. What did he say? And even then Al was like, listen, I'm not sure I'm supposed to be saying this. And then he gave us a great answer. But yeah, I just think it's who these guys are. And I just hope that Isaiah never loses it. Like, and I don't think he will, because nothing about what we've seen from him this year or last year or whatever, no matter what level he gets to, he still kind of has that giddiness about him. and that's cool. That's part of what makes him so endearing and so interesting, is that he's got that childlike demeanor to him.
Yeah, and now, obviously, those are the two stars and the two best players. I would say, as we go along, probably the next on the list of guys to talk to in the media, probably a tie between Avery Bradley and Jay Crowder. And, again, two very different types of people to deal with. Crowder is like a ball of emotion, especially after
Gordon Hayward games, right? Like, you know, there are things.
Or bopping John Wall in the nose.
Can we talk about the bop? Like, how perfectly placed was it to get him right on the nose? Like, think about that. Jay's having a great shooting season. To nail a guy in the nose with one chance, that's just impressive. But there are things that set Jay off, and you never know what it's going to be. You know, normally he's in that very KG, relaxed, you know, kind of very low key, and then there's something that sets him off. And that's, for us, that's great. But you got to find that. And, you know, Avery is all, I think the one thing we know about Avery is he's just undyingly optimistic. Like, they could get blown out by 50 points, and he's like, man, the great thing is, tomorrow we're going to come back, we're going to have a great practice, we're going to fix this. And you're sitting there saying, does he believe it, or is that just the way he wants to present it to the media? I think it's just part of what Avery is. He's just, again, he's so optimistic that they're good, that no matter what goes wrong, his puppy could get run over. He's going to be like, listen, man, the driver, he didn't see it. He's going to, you know, we're going to fix that puppy up, and he's going to come back stronger.
To that point, I can remember in, I think it was like L.A. 2 years ago, and they lost, I think it was an overtime game they lost in L.A., and it was when the Lakers were terrible. I guess they're still pretty bad. But there was like a, I think it was a Jeremy Lin-led Lakers team. They lost in overtime. And Avery Bradley was like, our execution was great down the stretch. Like, we just really found a lot to build on today. And he, like, whereas Jay reacts emotionally and kind of snaps.
We need to make trades. We need to blow this thing up. These guys aren't listening. Change the rotations. Yeah. Like, it's funny to see how different guys react to different things. And I think, by and large, this Celtics team is pretty rational. Like, I feel like they don't go over the deep end too often. But, you know, there are those times when clapping for Gordon Hayward and no one hears it sets Jay off. And there are times when, you know, and sometimes because we know that now as a media, like, we go in the room, we know, all right, Avery's probably going to be pretty optimistic even though they lost. But when he's not, then that's like, whoa, that sort of triggers the bell. And that's, you know, that's on us as reporters to, like, voice that to fans and, like, say, like, hey, Avery was pretty down on this team after this loss. That's a big deal because he's not like that. Just, again, it goes back to personalities. They're just all so different in their own ways.
Yeah, and like when Crowder said those things about Gordon Hayward, I think it became a national story. Like, it was on PTI. It was on all the national shows. And I think that was because people thought it was a huge deal that Jay Crowder snapped. And meanwhile, like, Jay Crowder sometimes reacts too emotionally. And what happens with Crowder is, like, he gives 30 minutes of, like, he's super pissed for 30 minutes. Probably no one can talk to him. And then 30 minutes later, he, like the blackout ends. And he snaps back to reality. And he realizes, like, okay, that probably wasn't the smartest thing to tweet back at people that I'm okay with leaving Boston. And really, I should be giving off the vibes that are true, that I love Boston. I love how the city has embraced me, and I like the opportunity I've gotten in with the Celtics. And
do you think he had that Ron Burgundy moment where he was, like, driving home and he goes, uh-oh, probably shouldn't have said that. You know, like that bell, or, like, was it when Danny called him and was like, come on, man. Like, at what point do you think Jay realized that he probably shouldn't have gone? Like, was he tweeting in the parking lot? Like, I feel like it was, we weren't even back from the locker room yet, and he had already, like, fired off his tweets about, I'm out of here, you know, you don't want me, I'll find someplace that does, retweeting about going back to the Mavericks, you know, and then probably, you know, an hour later he was simmered back down. But do you think he had that moment where he's like,
yeah, we had a chat actually on an earlier podcast about, like, what convinced him, like, what snapped him back to reality? Like, did one of his teammates text him and be like, Jay, what's up, man? Or, like, did Brad Stevens call and be like,
who'd that teammate be? Isaiah?
Isaiah could probably call him and be like, Jay, everything all right, man? Or Avery would be like, hey, man, everything's all right. Everything's great.
Man, you sent out some great tweets tonight. I love the enthusiasm. No, I do think he probably – it's interesting. Like, and Al's not really on social media, so did Al know? You know, like, Al's sort of that veteran guy who might be able to throw his arm around guy and be like, hey, Jake, you know, man, we love you. You know, calm down. But I don't know. I'm fascinated by that dynamic. That's the part we don't get to see sometimes. You know, as much as we can pry, you know, the Celtics are a very guarded organization in that regard. You know, they like to take care of things in-house. Even last night, when this whole brouhaha with the Wizards goes on, there, you know, Brad comes out and is like, I told my guys, calm down. And then Jay's like, I'm not commenting about it. And it's like, it's over. That's the way they prefer to take care of things. That's when we need Isaiah to be kind of give us a little of the inside info.
Yeah, Isaiah will tell us. Okay, so the rest of the roster, I don't even know if it's really too worth going into. So Gerald Green is probably the most entertaining guy on the roster. When I walked into the locker room the other night, this is just a little story. He's talking about Mad Max being the fiercest killer in movie history and having like what seemed like a pretty serious conversation about Mad Max being the fiercest killer in movie history. So I think he's kind of like a necessary piece to the locker room dynamic because
the loose cannon.
Yeah, it's like Al Horford really calm and Isaiah is like really focused before a game and Gerald is just kind of like the funny man.
Gerald.
Like I think back to what he was talking about how much he loves Christmas. Like it's just great. Like that's what we're all thinking. Like, we all love Christmas, like, that time of year. But you would think NBA players, millions of dollars, that they'd just be like, eh, whatever, Christmas. You know, Gerald's like, man, 2 weeks of celebrating, my favorite time of year. I love that he's just...
I believe his exact quote was, I wish that shit lasted 2 weeks. but yeah, so Gerald is, like, the funniest. Terry Rozier seems to enjoy his banter with Gerald Green. And now, so we go into the locker room and there's this room of the actual lockers. And then there's this room to the side where the reporters aren't allowed to go in. So now the players have started to congregate in that room. And we can hear like laughter coming and we can hear stories being told. One time Jaylen Brown came out of the room and was talking about where he'd bought his furniture. So I don't know what goes on in that room, but it seems like they have a good time. And I think for the most part, Gerald Green has been kind of a ringleader of organizing those pregame light chats in the other room. And Evan Turner was like the guy before who I think kept everything light and was always super funny. And so I think Gerald Green serves a purpose in that sense, just being like the funny guy who doesn't need to play all the time to be happy and just drinks his hot chocolate on the bench and just has a great time no matter what.
I think you're right. And I think that's an undervalued aspect of every team. Like when we think about team building, we're always like, well, you know, guy has to have a role on the court. Like, what does he do? What is like? But there's more than that. It's all about like, you need a guy in the locker room who can keep things light, who can just bring up crazy topics, who is really into it. Like, as much as we talk about Gerald and all these crazy stories, it's also Brad has gone out of his way to praise him throughout the season about, like, being into huddles and being excited for guys when they're playing well. And you think about the dynamic of the Celtics locker room. Like, I'm going around the room in my head and, like, you know, Zeller's quiet. He doesn't say anything. James Young, you know, just kind of hanging out. Mickey, like these guys, especially the young guys, they don't have that voice yet. You need someone who can sort of inject a little energy, a little enthusiasm in there. But you're right. My favorite part is like the other night we come into the locker room and Al is the only dude in the room. He's just sitting there like hanging out, eating his pregame sandwich. And we're like, Al, where is everybody? And he's like, everybody has their routine. And he turns back to watching game film. He's like completely oblivious to everything going on around him. And he just wants to do his routine. And then guys are, like, stumbling out of the training room laughing about something crazy. Like, I think Ed Lasserte's got laughing gas back there or something. Guys are just being silly. I remember back in the day, you know, obviously KG would hang out in that trainer's room forever, pregame and postgame. And I remember, like, the door would swing open, and you'd, like, kind of get a glimpse, and he's just watching Family Guy. And he loved Family Guy, and, like, that was his pregame routine. He would sit there getting taped up and laugh to Stewie, and he thought that was – guys are just different in the way they approach stuff. Like, who would have thought that Family Guy would be what got KG hyped up to go out there and be, like, the most emotional and intense player in the league?
Yeah, and I think especially, like, given how long the season is, I don't think a lot of people realize the mental grind. Never mind the physical grind of playing 82 games and playing back-to-backs and flying all over the place, but to sleep as little as these guys do and to have the strange hours these guys do and to be away from your families as much as these guys do, it's huge, I think, to have that type of enthusiasm. It's like if you go into work – and everyone around you is boring, and your day is kind of just blah, then your 8 hours are going to go by super long. And if you go in and Gerald Green's talking about how he wished Christmas would last 2 weeks, then maybe things go by a little. And having serious conversations about Mad Max, the fierce killer, then maybe your day goes by quicker, and maybe you have more fun, and maybe you put more into it, and maybe there's more enthusiasm. So I do think Gerald Green serves a real purpose. We'll pivot away from the rest of the locker room because
they're just boring.
Not that they're boring, but
we were talking about this before. Like Kelly, you get Kelly one on one, kind of engaging, fun, and then you bring a crowd around him, and maybe he's less likely to give you an answer. I mean, it's not surprising. I think if anybody listening to this podcast is sitting there at work and you think, what if like 20 of the most random sketchy dudes in the world came over to you and just started firing questions at you, most of which are just make you slap your head, you know, you'd probably be like, let's end this as quick as possible. You know, I think people don't see that part. It's like, it's part of their job to talk to us. But that doesn't necessarily mean we do a good job of it all the time. And I think it's just it's going to be bizarre to them to go in there and, you know, somebody might be writing a Jordan Mickey story and all of a sudden Kelly Olynyk's getting peppered with questions about Jordan Mickey. And like Kelly's sitting there saying, I don't know, you know, like it's just a weird dynamic. It's like imagine someone coming into your office and being like just grilling you about the project you're working on. Like, man, why isn't that project on deadline? Like, why did your presentation suck the other day, man? Why can't you use PowerPoint? And like, you know, how would you react? And so it's just an interesting dynamic that people don't get to see. They just see we filter it down to like the good sound bites. But I would love if people could see sometimes the other side of it.
Yeah, and to that point, like I always feel a little bad for James Young, because, you know, with the exception of probably the Indiana game this year when he really probably won that game for the Celtics, really turned that thing around and played some great defense, really gave them some great minutes. Like most of the time when he is surrounded by media, it's because either he's in a race for the final roster spot and is in danger of getting cut, or, oh, the Celtics declined your option. It's like almost every time he has a big media crowd, it's because either something bad happened to him, something bad could happen to him, or he just had an injury.
I thought the funniest thing, and I mean, this is mean, and I don't feel good laughing about it, but I think it was after the RJ Hunter thing, you know, James Young steps away from this, comes out, talks about winning that position, and, you know, Danny had kind of thrown him under the bus, saying he hadn't really earned anything in his life. James answers to that, you know, guy just really worked his butt off, won a spot, and he walks away, and one reporter went, well, that's probably the last time we'll talk to James this year.
But, ouch.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's just the way it is. Like, I mean, that's media reporters making light of their job, but, you know, to your point, like, poor James doesn't get to speak regularly. It's only when something happens. And maybe we need to be better about that. But it's just, I do feel bad sometimes. It's like, oh, well, you're injured now. Why aren't you out there? And that's the first time he's talked to us in 2 weeks. It can be a daunting situation, especially for a young guy.
Yeah, now let's pivot to some all-timers. So we are sitting outside in beautiful Atlanta. It's like 65 degrees. We're on the patio at the Courtyard Marriott Hotel in beautiful Buckhead, Atlanta. And the former former town of Al Horford out here. So I want to talk to you. We only have a few minutes left in this podcast. I want to talk to you about some of your favorite players to cover. And first, I want to ask about Kevin Garnett, because Kevin Garnett, to me, is one of the most fascinating people, not just that I've ever dealt with in media, but that I've ever met in my entire life. Like, there is so much to that guy, and just the way he approaches things, the way he sees things, the way he even communicates metaphors, just
and food metaphors, where I'll say, and part of me is like, I wish I had been on the beat earlier, because I missed some of those great championship year. Like, I was around for the 08 championship in like sort of a very limited role, and I came in with ESPN in like 2009, so it's sort of like those years where he got hurt and they missed out on that big run there where you wonder if they could have done more, and by 2012, you know, it's over. But I mean, KG was fascinating, and I'll say this, like, when people ask me about it, I always kind of go back to the same story. There's very few guys that you will sit in a locker room and wait 1 hour after a game to hear them talk for maybe 3 minutes. Because you knew he was always going to say something that you had to be there to hear. And, I mean, you got reporters who are sitting there, like, looking at the clock saying, I got a deadline coming up. I can't afford to be in here. I should be writing. You got guys in locker stalls, like, transcribing other guys, just trying to get a little bit of work done. But you couldn't run the risk of leaving because Kevin was going to say something, and it was going to be interesting. It was going to be really like the state of the union. Like, he spoke for those teams at that point, and you couldn't miss it. If you walked away and he was making a burrito analogy, you were gonna kick yourself. I mean, it was just so fascinating. Again, he would come out and he was very calm, and he was like, he would have a scarf around his neck, barely talking above an audible whisper, and then he just sort of gave you what you needed to hear. And then you walked out of the room and you said, I waited an hour and 3 minutes for that 3 minutes of audio, and it was worth it. And that's hard when you're like, I just wasted an hour of my life sitting in a chair in a locker room waiting for this guy to just get done his massage and come out. But like, Kevin was just, I mean, people see it now, like, it's must watch TV. Like, just, he's just a fascinating guy.
Yeah. And to me, I think I've probably talked about this on the podcast before, what was most impressive to me was how he would bounce from metaphor to seriousness, and he would always get to the heart of the matter, and he would always take time and give you like a really thoughtful answer. And sometimes, like, he would I didn't cover Garnett for long. I covered him full-time for like just a couple months, but I did a bunch of games for various newspapers and whatever during his time. But what always struck me was, A, how when he walked into a room, it was like everyone knew.
Hush. Silence. People just, like, got around there. I remember one night he started, like, he made a hair analogy, and he started going around the room. He's like, you know, looked at Bill Doyle. He's like, you got no hair. He looked at me. He's like, you got crazy hair. He's like, look, he's just going around. Like, you just never knew, and you had to be on your toes with Kevin because you just never knew where it was going to go. And just like you said, like, he could be just breaking down the pick-and-roll defense. Next, he's going off about something. It was, I don't know. I don't know if we'll ever see anybody like that in our time. You know, there's no one like that. I mean, Isaiah is the closest thing in terms of interesting, but Isaiah is always very level-headed, and, you know, I just don't know. It's very hard to describe KG and his intensity, and the fact that intensity could translate from the court into his post-game press conferences an hour after the game. But, you know, that was just KG.
Yeah, and honestly, one of my first games that I covered, I think he missed the first game that I covered. He was injured. The second game that I covered, and he would look down during his interviews, and he would usually have his head down. And then when he wanted to make a point, he would lift his eyes up and look at you, and it would be like, oh God, it would be like the eye of Sauron or whatever it is from Lord of the Rings, like the intensity there. And the focus, and it's like, oh my God, this guy is just a different type of human being. Okay, so beyond KG, who has been your favorite Celtic to cover? Probably not on the team this year. Let's exclude
players on the team this year.
And I can't. I'm going to disqualify Evan Turner because
that's the obvious choice.
Yeah, I know. Who has been the most interesting dude to cover? So Jermaine O'Neal was funny. Not funny. I shouldn't say that. That's the wrong adjective. But he would talk. Like, you would ask him, hey, how's the weather today? And 15 minutes later, Jermaine O'Neal had finished telling you about the weather. He had this way, like, where you would get done and your arm, like, that's the other thing. What people don't understand is reporters have great arm muscles because we sit there with our recorders in the air, you know, to the 7-foot dude, and for 15 minutes at a time. I mean, not anyone in this locker room. These sessions are pretty quick, but Jermaine would talk forever. And again, him and Ray Allen were very interested because they had this sort of big picture view of the world. Like, Ray was fascinating because he was very well spoken. He could speak on anything. I almost felt bad. It was like he would come into the locker room. His routine was he would come in with, you know, back in the day. So let me rewind. So right now when we go to talk, we talk to Brad, we talk to the opposing coach, and then we go into the locker room for 30 minutes or whatever it is. Back in the day, locker room open, we would talk to all the Celtics and then go out in the hallway for Doc at the end. So you had to, like, kind of choose. Am I going to stay in the locker room and talk to Ray, or am I going to go talk to Doc? And, I mean, Ray would be holding court on anything and everything, and it was amazing. But, like, people would just throw the most random – whatever the headline of the day was, like, Ray, what do you think about Tiger Woods getting that birdie on 16? He'd be like, well, man – you know, when I'm on the golf course, and, like, he would have a great answer about it. Like, it was truly fascinating. He was very presidential in the way he could talk about anything. Pierce was very KG-like. I was telling you my story was, you know, one of my first years in the league, Pierce was, like, one of the first ones on Twitter, and they beat Orlando, and one of his friends sent out a tweet, like, either right after the game or during the game or something. And it became a big deal. So I'm on SportsCenter the next morning. And
hold on. What was the tweet?
I think if I remember right, it can't because I think we were in Memphis the next night. So it must have been something during a regular season game. And I want to say it was Orlando or Miami. So maybe it was Miami when they got LeBron or something like that. I don't remember the details. But there was a secondary incident that I definitely remember where he tweeted out, break out the brooms when they were about to sweep Orlando. And people were like, flipping out about it. So whatever reason, I went on SportsCenter the next morning, and I'm like, well, you know, what's great about Twitter in its infancy before it took over the world was that you got unvarnished opinions from athletes. And whether it was Pierce or not, it was, like, amazing at that time to just hear someone kind of call out the other team like that. And so the next night in Memphis, you know, Pierce doesn't know me from anybody because I'm just kind of fresh on the beat. He kind of flipped over my press pass and shoved it into my chest. And said, you know, something like, don't talk to me, you're dead to me. And I was like, what'd I do? So I went up to him afterward, and I was just like, hey, man, you know, do you want to talk? And he was like, no. He kind of just did, like, this throat slash. And I was like, all right, I don't know what I did. And, like, I think someone eventually came to me and just said, hey, man, you know, you got to watch what you say. Or, you know, I was just new to this whole thing. And it eventually smoothed over, and Pierce was great and very interesting. But it sort of reaffirms, almost like Isaiah, they hear everything. They know a lot, not everybody, but there's the guys that are very in tune to what is being said out there. And even though Pierce was sort of the franchise and this bigger, larger than life figure, he knew everything that was being said about the Celtics. And that was one incident where he kind of took it out on me. But I mean, fascinating now to look back and say we had Ray, we had Pierce. I mean, you had Shaq. I mean, Shaq, I can't even believe I'm forgetting Shaq. Shaq was just like, same deal. You had to be there when he talked. Like, he was only there for 37 games or whatever it was. But, you know, that training camp with him and Nate Robinson doing, like, Twitter videos on each other. I mean, we were spoiled back then and we didn't know it.
Yeah, and I want to make it clear, like, we don't actually – I mean, to an extent, we do get to know the players, but one of the things that I've gotten to know from my time as a Celtics writer is that even as a writer, even as seeing these guys every night, even as talking to these guys almost every day of my life, even as seeing them more than I see my own family, I don't really know that much about the players. All I know is what type of personality they want to give off to the media. And Al Horford, I see him when he's buckled up. Isaiah Thomas, I assume that's his real personality because he's so open. Jay Crowder, I see him when he's at his most intense for the most part. When I see him joking around with teammates, it's like, oh, there's another side to that guy. So a lot of this is how we view people, and it's a different perspective than people who are around the players every day get. And it's sometimes a very different perspective. Like Marcus Smart, that is one of the most intense guys, and he never really gives too much of a personality during interviews. Everyone says he's a riot.
Everyone says he's the funniest dude on the team. And, like, he's very guarded when he's with us. It's just, again, like you said, we get this small glimpse. Brad. Everyone says Brad is, like, hilarious. Like, he has this dry sense of humor. But we don't often see it because guys like him and Al are always on message with, like, how they want to view, how what they want to say about the team. You know, in a way, it's at least from a reporter standpoint, I feel like we sit there and we sort of know what they're going to say. And sometimes we don't ask the question because you say, well, he's just going to tell me this. And sometimes you got to give the guy the opportunity to actually say it. But, yeah, there's two different worlds. And I think that's why social media is so fascinating. Kind of going back to the Pierce thing, we got this glimpse. We think we know the person, and then we see a little bit of a different side on social media. And it's neat now. I think we do it with Isaiah mostly. We'll be like, hey, man, we saw you were roller skating in the center of Boston. Like, what was that like? And he has a great story. It's always like, well, man, when I was growing up, I used to watch guys do pirouettes, and I was like, man, one day I'll do a pirouette. Or like, how is this a story? But it becomes a story, and that's
to be clear, he actually said he's terrible at ice skating and will never do it again.
I think he's an all-star at ice skating.
I'm not convinced there, but yeah. So everything we said in this podcast is just through our little window and what we get from 45 minutes before a game, 30 minutes. The locker room is open before a game.
And it's so hard because it's like 30 minutes before these guys are supposed to go out there and be like at the top of their game. I can't put it into words. I try to always relate. Like 20 minutes before you're about to go give the biggest presentation of your life in your office, and someone sticks a microphone in front of you, is like, what do you think, you know, what's going to happen tonight? What did you do to get ready for this presentation? And you're like, well, you know, man, I was at home, I was looking up some other presentations online, and I really like this, I really like the graphic this guy used online. Like, it's just such a bizarre world. I know it's a necessary evil, but it really is a fascinating thing. And the people that cover it, we talk about this all the time on the road. It's like, we're all so different. The players have personalities. The reporters have personalities. Everybody has their own aims when they're in their locker room, whether you're trying to write a story about, you know, for your paper, for your website, whatever it is. It's just such a unique experience. It's never-endingly fascinating to me.
It really is. So that was just a glimpse into our world, I guess, as reporters, that hopefully you enjoyed. Hopefully you got to learn a little bit about the players that maybe you didn't know already. Just a glimpse into their human side and what they're like, at least when they deal with the media. I don't even know if that's their human side. That's like their media side. We're not even humans. We're just guys that shove our microphones into people's faces after basketball games. Anyway, this is the Locked On Celtics podcast. Everybody go, if you don't subscribe to us already, go do that. Search for us on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher, wherever else, Google Play, anywhere. Search for Locked On Celtics Podcast. Subscribe to us. Give us a 5-star rating. By far the best Celtics podcast. It's not even close. No competition out there. Forsberg's laughing because there's actually a lot of Celtics podcasts. But he knows we're the elite of the elite. And
if Bleacher Report was to do a list of the top Celtics podcasts, I need you to give me like the top five right now. Who do you respect in this podcast?
The Locked On Celtics, Locked On Celtics, Locked On Celtics, Locked On Celtics, and Locked On Celtics with the Reina Jays. So that would be the top five. Anyway, that's it for this episode of the Locked On Celtics podcast. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network.